Legal Matters.
Just before I speak to Caleb McKellar, somebody's just sent me a message to say, let's hear the explicit clip, Aubrey. The court threw out the urgent application. Okay, that's a legal technicality that I can accept. The MP can go back and make an application on the merits of the case following normal court schedule. Okay, fine. Sure, I'm happy to, you know, indulge you on those bases, although I suppose it is urgent for somebody to say, listen, I want to go back to work. And I believe that I've been fired on unfair grounds. But are you suggesting to me that there is no such clip? Whoever you are, you've sent me this. Are you saying to me there is no such clip? Are you saying to me you don't know about this? Well, I could actually accept that because it was quite quiet. It happened over the festive season and so forth. So perhaps some people may not know that such a clip exists. I will find it and I will play it. 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. Caleb McKellar is attorney and partner at Beta McKellar Attorneys. Caleb, thank you so much for... Ooh, what's happened to Caleb? I've lost Caleb. I have lost Caleb. All right, it looks like we are going to try and find Caleb once more. Caleb McKellar is attorney and partner at Beta McKellar Attorneys. And I'm looking to understand what the status is as far as people that are in a relationship, in a romantic relationship, perhaps not married, and one of them passes on. What legal rights does the surviving partner have over the assets of the deceased? Caleb McKellar joins me now. Caleb, thank you so much for joining. Why are we dropping Caleb all this time? I'm not really sure what's going on. And maybe they're coming out to get us. Hey, what's going on in Burkina Faso? Hey, another coup, another president that has been removed extra constitutionally. Yeah. And, you know, it's becoming more. We were talking about the same story in Sudan just last week. Yeah. And it's becoming more and more. It's becoming more of an African story, yeah. And as much as I am very, very aware of these kinds of angles to say, Africa is that one continent that keeps missing the mark as far as governance is concerned, and everything always leads to some sort of coup or whatever the case may be. It appears that once more. On our continent, another coup, another day. All right, it looks like Caleb McKellar is back. Caleb, good evening to you, and thank you very much for joining us. So are you well?
Yes, very well on yourself, Aubrey. Good evening to your listeners.
Great stuff. Listen, I have had conversations with legal people such as yourself over the years about what rights a surviving, not spouse, because these people are not married, particularly in the case where people are in a relationship but never really solemnize their relationship through marriage customarily or otherwise, right? And one of them passes on. What rights does the surviving partner have over the assets of the deceased? I've heard many, many times, Caleb, that unless you are married, there is no such thing as a common law marriage and so forth. Unless you are married, there is no way you can claim the assets of the deceased. Please put us in the clear as far as that one is concerned.
Great, Aubrey. So it's important to remember that we are speaking, and your example speaks to circumstances where the deceased has not left a will.
Yeah.
And these are circumstances known as intestate succession.
Yeah.
So the court in this decision looked at the Intestate Succession Act and determined that the definition of survivor and the definition of spouse needed to include a permanent life partnership where the partners undertook reciprocal duties of support. So what effectively that does is now, under the Intestate Succession Act, if you pass away without a will, your estate will devolve in terms of the heirs that are left. And the first heir that the master will normally look at is the spouse. So by giving this judgment, the court has effectively said that when the master looks at who can inherit under the Interstate Succession Act, he may now look at a permanent life partner of the deceased.
How do we know whether somebody is a permanent life partner? What sort of markings do we need to have in order to say, okay, this wasn't just a casual relationship, or this wasn't just a relationship that was perhaps going to be a how do we decide that? Is there a legal way of determining that?
So what the Constitutional Court has done in terms of, and what it is allowed to do, is make recommendations to Parliament. Because we're dealing with a piece of legislation, being the Interstate Succession Act, and obviously that is promulgated and brought into law by Parliament. So essentially the court has given us some guidelines and given Parliament some guidelines as to what a permanent life partner might be. And they've referred back to the reciprocal duties of support. Now, they haven't necessarily given us much more than that at this point. But that's okay, because the Parliament's been given 18 months to remedy this constitutional defect in the legislation. And until such time as it is remedied by Parliament and the Act is amended, no estate will devolve in terms of this ruling. So estates will continue to devolve as they did before the ruling, and until such time, within the 18 months after the judgment was given, Parliament will give us, hopefully, some guiding, some maybe a definition or a few definitions as to what a permanent life partner will look like, because that is effectively the biggest issue we have now.
So essentially, Caleb, if I understand you correctly, the next 18 months, Parliament is charged with basically having to give us a definition of what a life partner is.
Correct. And we were left in a similar position with the, I'll just use the colloquial term, the Dacher case in the Constitutional Court. You remember that we were told by the Constitutional Court that personal possession of an adult of marijuana was legal, but they never told us how much was legal to be in a particular person's possession, and they said back to Parliament. So effectively, there's also a caveat there that they've said that if Parliament doesn't act, then the amendments, as the court has suggested, will come into effect after the 18 months. That still leaves us with a bit of uncertainty as to exactly what is a permanent life partner with reciprocal duties of support. But the court, in the particular case that it dealt with, did look at the duties of support that the two partners had. And I think it's worth mentioning that it wasn't a case that the duty of support was purely financial. The court recognized and understood that duties of support in a relationship, a consensual relationship between two adults, can contain duties of care for perhaps children or elderly persons that are close to that particular partnership. And running of a household, for example. Those are all considered to be duties of support.
Okay, but as things stand at the moment, if there is no solemn process or solemnizing of that relationship, either customarily or civilly, as things stand at the moment, the spouse, I'm using that word guardedly, who survives may not inherit the assets of the deceased unless explicitly said so in a will.
Correct, until Parliament has amended the Act. And remember, when there's an additional Act that was amended as well, which we might do well to mention this evening. And that is the Maintenance of Surviving Spouses Act. Now, as you can understand from the name of the Act, it, prior to this judgment, only envisaged maintenance for a surviving spouse of a marriage. So say the husband was to pass away and the wife was during the marriage and during his lifetime receiving maintenance, spousal maintenance. She was then entitled under the Survival Maintenance of Surviving Spouses Act to claim maintenance from his estate.
Yes.
The court has also ruled in this particular judgment that that act was unconstitutional insofar as the definition of surviving spouse did not include a permanent life partner and therefore that discriminated on the basis of marital status was found to be unfair.
I don't know if this is an obvious question or not, but if the partners in this relationship didn't bother to solemnize their relationship or get married or put it down in a will as to how the survivor is to be looked after, shouldn't that be a tacit sign that there was no intention by the deceased to basically look after the surviving spouse after their death?
Yeah, it's a very good question. That's going to be a very valid and real concern that Parliament needs to deal with, and they need to decide how they cater for that in the new definition that they provide in the Act. I mean, in the current case before the Constitutional Court, although it doesn't define the entirety of their ruling, but it was what they were considering. They were considering a couple that had the male had proposed before and the Lobola negotiations had begun. And there were indications, for all intents and purposes, that the parties were to be married.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that is the only way that a permanent life partnership might arise. But very importantly, the court went on to say that previous decisions that had stated that marriage was a choice and that we need to distinguish between married couples and non-married couples because it's a choice that they make. The court was quite clear in this judgment to set out various reasons why it is not always possible for each party in a relationship to have and be of equal bargaining power and for each party in a relationship to be able to make that choice freely. And they recognize that very often women in relationships are perhaps wanting to be married or wanting the relationship to be more serious. And however, for whatever reasons, and they provide some reasons in the judgment, that might not be the case. So they are trying to cater for circumstances where there appears to be some sort of evidence that both parties intended the relationship to be permanent and that both parties had taken up reciprocal duties of support and were supporting each other with the intention of the relationship being permanent.
So somebody sends me a message. It sounds cynical, but I think there's a real question there. This person says, So if I kiss you or someone a few times, you become my partner? I get that the question might be a bit clumsy, but it really is asking a fundamental question, which is what we're grappling with here. At which point is a relationship worth being deemed a permanent relationship? You were going to touch on those support duties. What did you call them?
Yeah, so the court has labeled them as reciprocal duties of support. Now, reciprocal simply means duties that both parties have taken up. So I think what the court is trying to point us to in that particular instance is that these duties of support go beyond just the physical intimate relationship that two persons have engaged in, and that they are either support that is given to the other partner's family, perhaps their children, perhaps their parents, or the household that the two parties are running together, or there's been a financial duty of support that's been uptaken. I think even more cynically, one might say that what if a particular person is married and they have chosen to have an affair, for example, and they are supporting someone financially,
yeah,
and they are perhaps supporting someone in that person's mind emotionally, and yeah, that person is reciprocating that duty,
yeah,
then where do we find ourselves?
And perhaps, let me add another one.
Yeah.
What if in the case of a polygamous relationship, right?
Absolutely.
You know the story of what's happening with the estate of the of the late Zulu King, where his first wife, is arguing that she is entitled to 50% of his estate, not as a king, but as a husband. So the case becomes quite interesting in that she's not saying, I am oblivious of the fact that we are talking about a king here, and the fact that he may have had many wives, and the fact that he is beholden as a king to the Zulu nation and all that is expected of him in that sense. He says, I'm not arguing that issue. I'm saying I'm a woman. He was a man. We were married. He died. I have legal rights to his estate. I mean, talk to me about that space.
Yeah, so again, it would only apply in circumstances where no will had been left.
Yeah.
And then, of course, in terms of the Intestate Succession Act, the spouse is, again, the first heir that is considered when a master is deciding how to divide that estate up. So we then come across issues of polygamous marriages and then also the children of those marriages.
Yeah.
Because remember, if in terms of the Act, if there's a spouse and children, and to make it a simple example, if there is a spouse and two children left from that marriage, then the spouse will receive 33% of the estate and then the remaining 33% for each child. So now what if you have more than one marriage and more than one set of children? Where does that leave us? I mean, it's important to note that while this is a constitutional court decision, it wasn't a unanimous decision. And there was dissenting judgments, and there was a caution, at least I read it as such, to say, you know, we need to be very careful as to how we are defining certain engagements in our society. Yes, we are a rainbow nation. Yes, we need to cater for polygamous marriage. We need to cater for different cultures and different understandings of marriage. But if we are now simply saying a permanent life partnership is to be recognized and understood, we need very clear parameters, and I'm hoping that Parliament will give us such parameters within which to operate.
So even in traditional polygamous relationships, right, there is the phenomenon of manglinza. I don't know if you've ever heard about this, Caleb.
But there's
the phenomenon of manglinza. That is a concubine, right? A girlfriend that the man has, even though he's married, right? It's something that's openly recognized. It's a concubine, especially if the guy is well-to-do and has his wives, but may have a concubine. Now, I would imagine that there are some reciprocal support roles being played there. Does she have any rights, any claims to his estate, should he pass?
Absolutely. I mean, again, we'll be guided by Parliament, but in terms of just reading on the judgment now, if no will has been left and the party comes forward, as they tend to do when estates are being wound up, come out of the woodwork, so to speak, and they allege and they can produce evidence to show that the deceased supported them either financially or otherwise, and that they reciprocated that support and they provided the deceased with various elements of support. I think there is definitely, and I'm no doubt we will be on a call in a couple of years' time when these sort of cases come before the courts again, and the court is then either Parliament hasn't provided us with a clear enough answer, or you know, we are again asked, the Constitutional Court is again asked to provide clarity on what it is to be a permanent life partner with reciprocal duties of support. And can it be the situation that you have just described? I definitely foresee that such a case will be before the courts in a very short period of time.
Dombi in Guatemala asks, hi, Orbs, what about the case where a guy ends a relationship of more than 10 years for no reason other than finding a younger woman? Yeah, trading in an older model for a new one? I say that with with the pain it should be said with, because I've seen it, I've experienced it, I've been a victim of it. That happens very, very often, where the issues of the how should we say, the power relations between a woman and her husband are such that she has no power. She is disinherited. She is perhaps even abused and may even initiate a divorce because of that. Has the Constitutional Court taken that into cognizance? I suppose all of these questions, Caleb, are about trying to understand what is the Constitutional Court's basis for the decision that somebody who is a reciprocal responsibility partner or life partner is therefore liable for inheritance of this of the deceased's estate or perhaps a portion thereof. What was the thinking?
So to take us back to the example you just gave, the court looked at such an example hypothetically to say, perhaps you do have a partnership, a man and a woman, and one of their partners is a dominant figure in that relationship.
Yeah.
And they are dominant to the extent that they do not wish for the parties to be married because they do not wish to share the assets or whatever the reason might be. So the court played with this idea and looked at previous decisions and previous decisions that have expanded and extended the understanding and included LGBTQ individuals under the rights currently in the law, and looked at circumstances where the court had decided not to include permanent life partners, but it had decided to include same-sex unions, for example. And one of the criticisms of the Constitutional Court this time around was to say they do not believe, at least the majority judgment, that circumstances where partners are living together but not married is always a case that those partners have decided and chosen with equal power not to be married. So they're trying to cater for circumstances where a party is disenfranchised in a relationship for whatever reason, but they are in that relationship still providing, and the male-female example keeps coming back.
Yeah.
It might be a bit stereotypical, but we'll go for it with it for now. To say that perhaps a woman in a relationship is running a household, is taking care of the children and raising the children, ensuring that the breadwinner is able to provide for them financially, but she is providing for them emotionally, physically,
understandably,
and providing a home.
Yeah.
That's the kind of situation that the court wanted to cater for.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Give us a call. 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. It is a bit of a conundrum, right? How do we determine whether somebody is a life partner from where you sit? How do we determine what is known as reciprocal support duties? What do you make of this Constitutional Court ruling? When was this Constitutional Court ruling made, Caleb?
So this Constitutional Court ruling was handed down in December. It was actually handed down on the 31st of December. It was heard very early last year. So the argument was given in February of 2021. Mm. And you can see by that period of time, between the hearing and the judgment being delivered, that the court gave it a lot of thought. I mean, they gave it some 11 months of thought.
Yeah.
But it had arisen because the case had been brought in Cape Town, and the High Court there had ruled on a constitutional issue, which took it straight to the Constitutional Court.
Do the justices in the Constitutional Court, in instances of customary marriage, do they consult perhaps with customary marriage experts, people from contra lessa, for example? Does that ever happen?
So yes, now the justices in the Constitutional Court are of course considered to be the highest justices in the land, and we all know the process they go through to get there. But it's not just them sitting on Constitutional Hill. They have with them each clerks and teams of clerks,
right,
who are selected as some of the greatest and best young legal minds that they employ to research these issues and to canvass with relevant stakeholders. And so, there were a couple of parties that had been included as interested parties in this particular matter as well. That's, for example, the Women's League Centre Trust was admitted, and the Commission for Gender Equality. And those two parties both submitted arguments at the hearing and gave their experience, not only between the legal advocates that argued, but they also led some evidence from experience from their particular members and the persons that they had consulted with on the ground. So they tried to, as best as possible, as best as they can, consult with a wide portion of society.
Caleb, let's pay the rent. We've got a couple of calls coming through. Please give me a call on 011-883-0702-021-446-0567. What should be the considerations by Parliament in determining what a life partner is in this instance? Please give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. Somebody says, careful who you kiss. You might disinherit your children. Let's take a break. When we come back, Caleb McKellar is my guest, attorney and partner at Beta McKellar.
Legal Matters.
Mulan 43 on Twitter says, Aubrey, we had a child, lived together for 9 years, just ended things because we wanted different things. He wanted marriage, I didn't. Do you know how I struggled to get half of what we had? Although we contributed equally throughout the 9 years period, throughout the 9 years period. In the end, I just walked away with zero, says Mulan 43. And many of you, of course, wanting to weigh in on this particular discussion. My guest is Caleb McKellar, attorney and partner at Beta McKellar Attorneys. We're talking about a constitutional court ruling, which really is still quite suspended at the moment because the constitutional court has sent the discussion back to Parliament for Parliament to provide detail as to what exactly is a life partner and what are reciprocal support duties that will determine whether or not somebody is a life partner. And we're hashing it out with Caleb McKellar. I'd be interested to hear your scenarios, your situations, and whether or not those issues are to be considered both by the Constitutional Court and Parliament. Let me speak to Dolly in Pretoria. Good evening to you, Dolly. Why are my calls being dropped? Okay, I don't know what's happening. Do you want to pick up this call for me? Mokobe in Pretoria, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, I'm well, thank you, Mokobe. Mokobe, how are you?
Good, man.
Yeah.
Well, I just had a question. I think I was just discussing with the operator before I came online.
Yeah.
Mine was more on, it should be dating life now. Normal guy in Pretoria, you meet a person, you might start dating. She might visit you a week, might go over a week and so on, or you even stay together for a couple of months or whatever.
Yeah.
When that person is here, they will clean, they will support you, they will do gestures, they will cook, they will do something. Does that then entitle that person to them and say, no, but I was a partner. I need to inherit or whatever the case is. And during that point, you're actually trying to date, you're actually trying to see if I really want to marry this person. But something might happen if you think, no, this is not the person that I want to marry. But because of this judgment, it seems like that person can then walk and say, no. But because I was doing those things, it means I'm entitled to some form of inheritance from him.
Mm.
Now, yes, it is law. It's now a case law. It's fine. But practically speaking, how does it work when it comes to dating? Because it complicates the whole thing.
Yeah. And I suppose that's what Parliament has to determine for us. Yeah. I could be in just a casual fat and sit kind of relationship, right? With no intention to really get married. We live together, but there's no seriousness for permanence in that relationship. And you're asking, what happens if in that process I die? Does she or he, whoever I have the relationship with, have a right to claim a portion of my estate? Am I getting you correctly, Mokobe?
Yes,
Caleb, your thoughts?
Great. Thanks for the question. I think it's important, and I'll just refer back to the judgment, to to say that we are only dealing with circumstances where a partner has died while the relationship was ongoing. And the court referred us to a couple of other judgments, but I'll just briefly take you through them, Aubrey. And the court said, after all, permanent life partnerships are intimate relationships that are meant to last until the death of one or both the partners. So there needs to be that intention. And then the relationship needs to embrace intangibles such as loyalty and sympathetic care and affection, concern, as well as the more material needs of life, such as physical care, financial support, the rendering of services and the running of a common household or support-generating business. And the court said that those features are not foreign in permanent life partnerships. So there's going to need to be, from Parliament at least, guidance. But the court has given us some suggestion as to what a permanent life partnership is. And in the circumstances where a relationship has ended and the parties have separated, that is no longer a permanent life partnership. The partners have gone their separate ways. There's no intention to keep that partnership permanent.
Yeah. Okay. Dolly.
I understand your listener's question to say that what if they are together and then one of them passes away?
Exactly. I think
that
that's the question.
That would be a difficult situation. Yeah. That'll be the things the court will look at, what duties of support had both parties undertaken.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk to Dolly in Pretoria. Hi, Dolly. Oh, Woban. There. Dolly's gone again. I think somebody's trying to sabotage me. Okay.
They tried to sabotage us earlier, so it's very possible.
All right. Chris, do you want to help me pick up these calls, please? Salo in Johannesburg. Hi, Salo.
Good evening, Aubrey.
Yeah, go ahead, sir. What is on
good
your
evening,
mind?
Yes. A situation whereby the person that I stay with or could be a life partner has been in a relationship while I was friends with her. For a short time, and they've left, and I'm still in a partner of hers, and they want to lay claim based on the hierarchy system, hierarchy on that they were intimate, and also having the community stepping in and without our consent of all the parties involved in terms of the two life partners that may be involved or the two life friends may be involved in that. How do you deal with that? And it's something that a community has taken upon themselves to make a decision on.
How is that the community? What does that mean, the community?
It will be based on, well, starting by the neighbors and also the places where we would have been socially seen out and about, like for example at Fairmont Bowling Club or etc.
So look, you need to build a very tall stop nonsense.
And
Caleb, help Phil out, please.
I think the first thing that we can say is that, you know, this judgment is only dealing with circumstances where the state is dealt with interstate, meaning there's no will that has been left. So immediately your partner and yourself could draft wills that direct exactly how your states would be dealt with upon death. And it is a morbid thing to discuss with a partner, but it is a very important reality to be alive to. So immediately by doing that, you would rid yourself of that conundrum upon death. But in your current circumstance where an ex-partner of your partner is seeking to lay claim to her estate, there is no, unfortunately, legal right and title for that person to do so unless they are claiming some sort of child maintenance if there was a child of that particular partnership. So I'm not entirely sure, Aubrey touched on it, what is being meant by the community, for example, pressures being applied or who is applying that pressure. Yeah. But I can't foresee on the facts that you provided me with, albeit they are limited, what legal rights or how that particular ex-partner is seeking to lay claim to your current partner's assets or estates.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Chris, if you can pick up this final call for us, Dolly in Pretoria. Hi, Dolly.
Hi, how are you, Audrey? Finally.
Thanks for holding, Dolly. Really appreciate it. Go ahead. What's your question?
Thank you so much. So my situation is I was engaged to be married, and just about a week before the wedding, my ex-partner decided to break things off. But we had already paid lobola, and you can imagine everything was paid for, etc.
Sure.
So my curiosity is, God forbid, should I pass on, would my partner be able to claim into my estate? And in such an instance, how does one protect oneself against such? Because we did eventually have a formal meeting that he's confirming that he doesn't want to be part of the relationship anymore. Is that recording sufficient? Because I had to record it. So I recorded it just to make sure that I have that evidence. But I just wanted to find out, can a person claim into my estate in this regard?
So the lobola was fully paid?
The lobola was fully paid.
No, Dolly, onyedwe, mama, onyedwe. Caleb, let me understand. If customarily speaking, if the lobola was fully paid, all of the customary sort of processes were fulfilled, would this guy be able to come back to Dolly and say, no, you're my wife. I married you. What do they need to do to make sure that he doesn't have that kind of power over her in the future?
Yeah. So without making any assumptions as to what has taken place, remember this judgment is only dealing with interstate succession, meaning a circumstance where Dolly hasn't left a will, which directs the master as to how he must deal with her estate. So very simply, she could tomorrow draft a will for herself and have two witnesses sign it with her, in terms of which she directs that her estate is given to whoever she chooses. And in those circumstances, the master of the court would be guided by that will and would not need to entertain any requests from any purported partners.
But the fact that they would have been married under customary law, which implies community of property already, Caleb, wouldn't that supersede the will?
Yes, so if a marriage is registered as a customary marriage or in community of property marriage, now, like I said, I'm not entirely sure if the marriage was consummated as such or if all the processes had been completed. But yes, a marriage would supersede a will and determine how a state is dealt with.
So my sense is that Dolly needs to make sure that this marriage is annulled first.
She must definitely make sure, yes.
Absolutely, Dolly, because I think that there's room to argue here by your ex to say that, no, but we went through a proper marriage ceremony. It's my word against hers, but now Dolly's dead and, there's no argument. You understand what I'm trying to say? I think you really, really need to make sure that there's a very clear annulment and you need to cover yourself by putting in some sort of will there. I think the rule of thumb here, Caleb, is that get the will written up.
Yes, definitely is. I think it saves a lot of difficulty down the line. Yeah.
Caleb, how do we get in touch with you? And I'd like to follow this case quite closely to hear what Parliament is going to say about the duties that they have to the Constitutional Court in determining who's a life partner and all of that stuff we're talking about today. But how do we get a hold of you?
Via email will be the easiest.
Yep.
It's Caleb.
Yep.
@ Sparta McKellar, the name of the firm, .law.
All right. Caleb McKellar, attorney and partner @ Barta McKellar Attorneys. Thank you very much for joining us.